Good evening. The Omnibus Supplemental Finance Conference Committee will come to order. Members and people that are here, we are not going to be able to take up the HHS supplemental or article right now. It is not quite ready, so we are going to be calling a hearing early tomorrow morning on that. But before us, we have the 340B discussion, and we have some amendments that have to be adopted tonight on that. And I would like to have Representative Knobloch, would you please move the A231 amendment? And I'll have Mr. Nauman explain it, please.
Madam Chair, I move the A231 amendment.
Representative Knobloch moves the A231 amendment. Mr. Nauman.
So, Madam Chair,
you should have that before you, members.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. This article is titled Miscellaneous Finance. It's a collection of items that appeared in the original Senate file as Article 42. In most cases, these are, I think largely in all cases, with maybe one exception, these are largely technical adjustments to mostly MMB forecasts, MMB statutes. Section 1 adjusts the date, the outer edge date at which the November forecast could be submitted to, could be submitted publicly. Under current law, it is no later than the end of the first week of December, and that is adjusted in Section 1 to be December 6th. Section 2 is a technical adjustment that I think Senate staff believes is a residual from an old Senate committee structure that changes which chair must receive consultation from the commissioner of MMB in preparing the debt service forecast, changes it from the State Government Finance Committee to the Finance Committee. Section 3 adds a new report that would be issued to the legislature every other October 15th. It coincides with the, in odd-numbered years, at the end of the biennium, we would get a new general fund budgetary balance. This became a noteworthy need for the legislature last year when there was a significant adjustment in revenues between the end of session and budget close. It would have been helpful for us to have some additional data at the prior to the November forecast, which is traditionally when we get that data. So that is not a technical adjustment, but it's a new report. Section 4 and 5 and the repealers relate to the old tobacco securitization bonds. Back in the 2011 legislative session, one of the budget solutions was to sell $640 million of essentially the tobacco payments were used to support the debt service on selling bonds, and that revenue was booked as a resource and helped balance the budget in 2011. There were two mechanisms. One was tobacco securitization bonds, which was the original bond sale mechanism. It used an authority rather than selling directly state appropriation bonds, because at that point in time the state and the attorney general were uncertain whether appropriation bonds were a legal method of selling state debt. So in law, two mechanisms were put in place. One was the security bonds, the tobacco securitization bonds, and then the second method was the appropriation bonds. The appropriation bonds was ultimately the method that prevailed after originally selling the tobacco securitization bonds. So this now ends up being dormant statutes, and that's what the repealers are. If I can ask members to move to Section 7. So those two sections relate to the tobacco securitization bonds, and those are being repealed. Sections 4 and 5 are appropriation bonds that just adjust old cross-references that are no longer required. And then the remaining section in this article is a provision that was also in the recent tax bill Last year's tax bill included some fire remediation grants for the city of Melrose and Stearns County, and had the money available until June 30th, 2018. This proposal adjusts the allocation of the aid to the city of Melrose and Stearns County slightly. About $85,000 is swapped between Melrose and Stearns County, and then the money is made available until the end of the current biennium. And I've already discussed the repealers, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nauman and Representative Knobloch.
Yeah, Madam Chair, on that last one, I'm assuming that that's correct in terms of the Melrose and Stearns County allocation. I guess I hadn't heard that myself, and that's not in my district. I've contacted Representative Howe, and I'm fine going ahead with this. I'm assuming that that's okay, but if for some reason I hear otherwise in the morning, I want to be able to go back and change that.
Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair and Representative Knobloch, I should highlight that this was not in the original Article 42 of the Supplemental Finance Bill as it currently appears in this amendment. As it was in the Supplemental Finance Bill, there was no change in the allocation. The tax staff in the Senate had done a fair bit of work on this, and they advised us that there was a preference to change that allocation. We have emails to the effect that the city was interested in that allocation, and so that this language mirrors what was in the tax bill.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions, comments on the A-231 amendment? Representative Knobloch renews his. Mr. Nauman?
No, Madam Chair. I was just going to mention there were a few sections that were in Article 42 that had been picked up in other sections of the Supplemental Finance Bill. There was a cancellation of some old disaster money. There was a transfer in the judiciary area that has been included in those articles. There was some cleanup of the automatic payment to the Clean Water Fund. That was included, I believe, in the state government's article. And then there was one provision that related to the so-called ITA transfers, sometimes referred to as the Odyssey Fund, and that the Department of Management and Budget expressed some opposition to that, so that was not included in this article.
Thank you. Mr. Nauman, did Mr. Marks work on this, too, with you?
Madam Chair, I have spoken with Mr. Marks about this on several occasions.
Okay, super. Thank you for your work on this, Mr. Nauman. Appreciate that. Senate Representative Knobloch renews his motion on the A-231 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Okay, members, before us, we have the 340B discussion, and again, I would like to announce that we are not going to get to the Health and Human Services article tonight. So if anybody is here for that, we will be taking up the spreadsheet and the language appropriations tomorrow morning. Okay, so I just want to make sure with that. There are three amendments in front of us right now that I would like to have. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, just a quick question. When you say tomorrow morning, do we have a time on that, or are you going to announce later maybe?
I have not discussed that with Representative Knobloch yet. I know our session has been changed to 10 o'clock now, which I didn't know. And so I'm hoping not too early, Representative Knobloch, I'm just saying. But once we get everything before us, I don't think it's going to take that long to get. Yes, Senator Benson.
Madam Chair and Chair Knobloch, having language posted, perhaps, and then a time after that language is posted, unless it's posted at 4 a.m. But I'm a little nervous about publicly saying it's even going to be morning until I'm sure that language is locked up and agreed to.
Yes, thank you, Senator Benson. I think that's a very good point.
Madam Chair.
Representative Knobloch.
I guess it would be my intention to try to call the meeting as soon as we have the language and can post it and adequately look at it. But, you know, what time that might be at this point, I guess I obviously don't know.
Okay. Great. So, members, to get the 340B discussion in place, we do have three amendments that I would like to have amended onto the bill, and that is Our You want to do it now?
Yeah.
Okay. Members, we're going to back up. We have one more amendment that does not deal with the 340B. It's the A-139 amendment. It's being passed. Perhaps everybody has that. Okay. Thank you. Representative Knobloch?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd move the A-139 amendment, which is drafted to the miscellaneous finance language that we just adopted.
Energy efficiency here.
Yeah.
It's time to go home.
And what this relates to, Madam Chair, is there was an issue here in the last year or two where part of the money from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund was used to do a video project that promoted domestic terrorism. And we want to make sure that doesn't happen again. And so this amendment would prohibit that sort of use of these funds.
Thank you, Representative Knobloch. Do you make the motion to move A-139 amendment?
I do.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bodern, the amendment says that the money can't be used for domestic terrorism or criminal activities. By inserting criminal activities, would I be correct that that would mean criminal activities outside of domestic terrorism? In other words, all criminal activities.
Mr. Bodden.
Madam Chair and Senator Newman, that's certainly the way I would read it. It appears to apply generally to all criminal activity.
Senator Newman.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions on the A-139 amendment? Representative Knobloch renews his motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. So now before us, we have 340B, and we have three amendments. Members in front of you, you should have those that we're going to amend onto the omnibus bill, the A-138 amendment. Senator Benson, would you like to? No, actually, Mr. Dahmer, would you like to do this?
I don't have it.
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Benson,
are we going to have an explanation of what we're working on tonight, or do you want to do the?
I think I'd like to do the amendments first, and then we'll have the explanation. So, okay. Yeah. Okay. We are going to go ahead and first have the testimony, and I think I'd like to have Senator Benson. Would you like to talk first about this?
Just briefly, the days are blending together, but it was probably yesterday morning I received notice that we are out of federal compliance on our 340B drug reimbursement, and I believe the impact, if we don't make these changes, is about $190 million federal dollars, particularly hits our high MA concentration hospitals hard. And so the department has been working with stakeholders to develop some solutions. It's my understanding there is a solution that would cost about $1.5 million, but I've had a lot of moving parts today, and I'd appreciate hearing from the department if they could walk us through the narrative, what their plan is, what it means to come into compliance, who is impacted, how much they are impacted, and then how much general fund money they anticipate needing to sort of provide some cushion or bridge until we come up with a better solution, and then recommendations for sources of that general fund money.
Thank you, Senator Benson. And if we could have Commissioner Johnson come up, and Mr. Burdick, I believe, would like to say a few words. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thanks. You, Chuck Johnson, acting commissioner of the Department of Human Services. I'll be very brief in turn to Mr. Burdick. I just wanted to thank the committee for taking up this issue. As Senator Benson said, this is an issue that came at us late in the game, and we were trying to figure out how to manage it, given that the federal government had told us that we that our rationale for how we thought we were in compliance based on our current operations and allowing us to bridge toward a biennial cycle next year when we would have been back in a budget year was not accepted. And so we're in a position now of trying to figure out if we can come into compliance and, as the discussion here tonight, how to address some of the issues of stakeholders, particularly the hospitals and the impact that would happen there. So I'm going to ask Mr. Burdick to walk you through what's in front of you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt Burdick, I'm the Legislative Director for Healthcare and Behavioral Health at the Department of Human Services. As Acting Commissioner Johnson mentioned, this was an issue that we brought forward and had discussions with the legislature last year. This is actually something that was in part of consideration at the end of session budget negotiations, but did not become part of the final package. A little bit of history. The Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services finalized a new rule that applies to outpatient pharmacy reimbursement for fee-for-service medical assistance. And that rule took effect on April 1st, 2017, and states had a grace period to come into compliance with that rule. Following last year's legislative session, when our proposal to try and comply was not successful, we had asserted to CMS that their rule indicated that states must come into compliance when they change their pharmacy methodology. And we had asserted since that we are not changing our methodology at this time, we were not out of compliance with the rule. After several back and forths with CMS, very recently a phone call with them, they have made it clear that they consider Minnesota out of compliance with that rule. We have been trying to seek clarity from them about exactly what they would do if Minnesota did not comply. We know from other states that there have been conversations about a disallowance of federal funding. And so in Minnesota, the value of our outpatient fee-for-service pharmacy, the federal portion of that is around $190 million annually. And so that is an option that CMS has. They can also do other things such as withholding federal funding. And we have been working with them as recently as today to try to get a firm answer from them about the consequences of noncompliance and still have not received anything in writing. But we know that this is a very big risk to the state, which is why we brought this forward to the legislature earlier this week and recognized the timing is far from ideal. A few notes on how what we have brought forward to the legislature, which is reflected in the A229 amendment. This proposal was designed to be budget neutral to the state budget. And there are several differences from what was presented last year that I can speak to briefly. The first is there is a change in required by the federal rule in what we pay for dispensing fees for the act of dispensing a drug. The fee that we are proposing in this year's proposal is lower than the proposed fee last year by about 87 cents, I believe. The other difference is in last year's proposal, we had added a 2% add-on to the payment rate to cover the Minnesota Care Provider Tax that is passed on to pharmacies. That add-on is not part of this year's proposal. And the last component that has changed is we are seeking permission to negotiate with drug manufacturers for additional supplemental drug rebates for hemophilia drugs, which are some of the most expensive drug classes, and we are currently prohibited from engaging manufacturers about discussions about achieving additional Medicaid rebate, which helps bring down the cost of drugs for the Medicaid program. Those three components together result in a proposal that is budget neutral to the state's budget. We have also heard that the initial proposal had a different impact on different stakeholders, but for most stakeholders, it was not a positive impact. We understand that this proposal presents an even greater risk and liability to numerous stakeholders. Most specifically, we've heard from our safety net hospitals who are sometimes who participate in the 340B program, which is a federal program that we don't need to get into the details unless you'd like to, Madam Chair. But the essence of it is hospitals that serve a high proportion of clients that need high-cost specialty drugs are particularly negatively impacted by this rule. And so one of the other amendments that you see before you is an effort to bridge funding to mitigate the impact on those hospitals so that services are not impacted. Retail pharmacies and other stakeholders are impacted by this rule as well, and I'm sure you'll be hearing from them later on. We'll be transparent. Our more negatively impacted in this year's proposal than what was presented last year when additional resources were requested. But I'll let them speak to the impact for their various constituencies.
Thank you, Mr. Burdick. Are there any questions for the commissioner or Mr. Burdick?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Knobloch.
Commissioner Johnson, I guess when did you learn of this again?
Madam Chair and Representative Knobloch, I believe we learned about it about a month ago. We got a letter from CMS.
Okay. Representative Knobloch.
Madam Chair, and I guess it would, and if it was a whole month ago, it would have been, I guess, nice to have learned about it earlier than just in the last, very short time here. So I guess, again, Commissioner, can you tell me, and maybe you'll have to repeat yourself a little bit, can you tell me exactly what rule they are saying we somehow have violated or and how we violated it and how we are out of compliance?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative Knobloch, there was a new federal rule implemented last year related to pharmacy benefits within the Medicaid program. And we brought forward a proposal last year, as Mr. Burdick said, that would have addressed and brought Minnesota into compliance with that proposal. But at the end of session, there was a cost to it. It didn't fit within the budget that we were negotiating, and so it dropped out. Over the interim, we worked to try to convince CMS, essentially, that what we were doing now was in compliance, as Mr. Burdick said, because we hadn't made any change to our pharmacy benefit. And so until we did that, we felt we were arguing. We didn't have to come into compliance with the new rule. Basically, CMS told us, well, we don't really buy that rationale, and you need to come into compliance.
Representative Knobloch.
And Madam Chair, Commissioner Johnson. So the specific rule, which it sounds like relates to, higher cost drugs, what changed that we're supposedly no longer in compliance?
Commissioner Johnson.
Madam Chair and Representative Knobloch, in a sense, nothing changed. The pharmacy, they passed a new rule, and we have not made any changes to come into compliance with that new rule. As I said, we tried to justify to CMS that we didn't need to do it right away because we had not made other changes to our pharmacy benefits. And essentially our argument was to try to extend us till next legislative session on the theory that we are a state that has biennial sessions, and that's when we reset around fiscal matters. CMS said, no, this rule is in place. It's a force of law, and you need to be in compliance with it.
Representative Knobloch.
And I know you've talked a little bit about, I guess, the two different options to come into compliance. Maybe, Madam Chair, I think you're going to have some other witnesses, I believe, right?
Yes, Representative Knobloch.
Why don't I hold off asking any questions until I hear those?
Okay. Commissioner Johnson or Mr. Burdick, how many other states are out of compliance, if I could ask?
Madam Chair, we can get that figure for you before the evening is over. I believe there are not very many states that have not yet come into compliance, and they are facing similar pressure based on our conversations with them from CMS. But I will get you a firm number before we're done here tonight.
And Commissioner, Mr. Burdick, can you speak to the amendments we have before us, their fiscal impact, and basically describe what the amendments do?
Certainly.
Before we get to the proposal of adopting them, please.
Certainly, Madam Chair. We are still we just received fiscal note requests so this evening, so we are working on the numbers, but I can give you a general estimate and kind of an idea of where each of these fit and also describe what each of them does.
Okay.
So the A229 amendment, this is our proposal for how the state intends to comply with this federal outpatient drug rule. And without going too deeply into the weeds, because pharmacy pricing is possibly one of the most complex parts of our medical assistance program, the essence of what this does is changes our formula for how we pay for drugs, both how we pay for reimburse for the cost of the drug, as well as how we reimburse for the dispensing of the drug. In addition, there is the change to allow us to negotiate for additional Medicaid drug rebate for hemophilia drugs. That was the other piece that I mentioned. Those are the three components of that amendment. And that is budget neutral to the state budget. I believe there are small tail savings, but we're working on getting firm numbers to the committee this evening. The second amendment, the 00036 amendment. So I understand this is an amendment that the Minnesota Hospital Association has been working on. This amendment seeks to provide the bridge funding for our 340B hospitals who would be most adversely impacted by this. And the essence of what this amendment does is allow for an enhanced payment rate for these hospitals for a temporary period of time. And I believe there's a date issue that we're working to address. The dates would intended to be January 1, 2019, when this rule would take effect, through July 1, 2019. In essence, giving us time to come back next legislative session with a longer-term approach to that. The essence of this is looking at how these hospitals are negatively impacted, particularly because of the volume of high-cost drugs that they offer, and trying to find an equitable way to compensate hospitals via a payment mechanism that we already have in place with them for how we pay hospitals to ensure that this can go out quickly and reasonably, and we're not setting up a whole new infrastructure trying to streamline that process. And the third amendment you have in front of you, I believe, directs DHS to engage with stakeholders over the interim and come back to the legislature with specific recommendations about how we would mitigate the impact of this rule and the consequences that it has for the various stakeholders that you'll hear from here today.
Are there questions at this time on these amendments? We will wait until Representative Knobloch asked to have his staff look at the amendments, and we will do that and take some testimony. But at this point, are there any questions on the amendment? Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like Acting Commissioner Johnson to speak to this. The A-229, we were told it's budget neutral. Will you affirm that it is budget neutral? Will have no impact if we adopt it?
Commissioner Johnson.
Madam Chair and Senator Benson, I'm sorry I didn't hear the end of your question.
Thank you. Acting Commissioner Johnson, the A-229, if we adopt it, was represented that it was budget neutral. Will you affirm that it is budget neutral?
Commissioner Johnson.
Madam Chair and Senator Benson, it is a budget neutral amendment. We are still examining some pieces of it, as Mr. Burdick said, that I think we need to confirm on that. Our goal in bringing it was to bring a budget neutral amendment. That's what we're working toward. But there are a couple of moving pieces we're still looking at.
And Commissioner Johnson, when would you have affirmative thoughts on this amendment?
We're working out to have it tonight for you.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Tomorrow morning, possibly?
Tomorrow morning would be fine, too.
Okay.
So, Madam
Senator
Chair,
Benson?
I think the fact that we don't have a fiscal note makes it, you know, it's delaying our process a little bit. So I just want it on the record that this is slowing us down. Yes, there might be other problems with other articles in the Human Services Bill, but this is taking time that could be spent on those other articles that were legislative priorities. Madam Chair, I also have a question for Commissioner Johnson on the KC00036. It looks like you're requesting $1.5 million. Is this an amendment to the governor's official budget?
Commissioner Johnson.
Madam Chair and Senator Benson, no, it's not. This is just something we've been working with the Hospital Association on that would address their concerns and provide a bridge to next year where we might be able to work out a more permanent solution.
Senator Benson.
So, Madam Chair, Commissioner Johnson, so you're not advocating that we spend $1.5 million?
Commissioner Johnson.
Madam Chair and Senator Benson, I think that what the position the governor is in now is once this committee finishes its business and has a position in place, that then we'll negotiate from that point forward. And certainly we are interested in seeing this provision get accomplished this session. So we'd be happy to engage in that conversation at that point.
Senator Benson.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Johnson, so this is not a priority for the governor?
Commissioner Johnson.
Madam Chair and Senator Benson, this is something we're bringing to the committee because we're concerned about the potential for being out of compliance with federal law and the potential for sanctions that would come from it.
Senator Benson.
Madam Chair, given that the department has known about this for a month, they should have talked to the governor and let us know if this is a priority, because if we are going to act with urgency, I'd like to hear from the governor that it's an important request. And so I would ask that we not adopt these amendments tonight until we get some clarity on this language, if that's okay with the chairs.
Thank you, Senator Benson. Further testimony? Ms. Greenkey? Mr. Humphrey, I'll come up to you.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Krinke. For the record, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. I really wish I didn't have to be here this evening talking about this issue. I received a call over the weekend that Minnesota, our plan might be $190 million out of compliance on the outpatient drugs and 340B. I was then told that this would obviously impact our safety net hospitals considerably. I had an opportunity then to reach out to our large safety net hospitals, particularly the Children's Hospitals, Hennepin County Medical Center, Fairview University, and in particular the drugs that are part of the 340B program. It's HIV drugs, which hits Hennepin County Medical Center very hard. These are very expensive drugs, and cancer drugs for our children's hospitals. This is a big impact to these hospitals without having any preparation time, without really having alternative course of action. So I went this week to see Committee Administrator Holly Iverson on the House side, and we started brainstorming about possible ideas. We kind of thought that maybe the best approach would be if we could run it through our DISH program, because that already measures high volumes of Medicaid. So then we can find out who the biggest impact, which hospitals would be impacted the most, because it's through our DISH program. And that would also potentially then leverage a federal matching dollar. So then we were able to, originally we were talking about possibly $3 million for this program. And after some creative brainstorming, we decided if we could do it through the DISH program, we could make it eligible for federal money. So with that, Madam Chair, we'd really appreciate, and I know that your targets have been set, but if there's any way to do this, it would be very helpful to these large hospitals that deal with a lot of Medicaid population. With that, it's a bridge program, and I know there's another amendment in here to set up a task force to see if we could come in with more longer-term solutions to the 340B program. So that involves other stakeholders as well. And with that, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, we appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Krinke. Representative Knobloch.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Ms. Krinke. Does the state at this time have any programs that subsidize higher cost drugs for hospitals over and beyond the, you know, basic Medicaid reimbursement and basic, you know, programs that apply to all drugs?
Ms. Krinke.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, the state participates in drug rebate programs that support our overall state Medicaid program. The hospitals, per se, benefit from this 340B program, which is a federal program. So the answer is our state Medicaid program benefits, but hospitals directly benefit from the 340B program.
Representative Knobloch.
But, Madam Chair, I guess I'm just trying to establish that this would be, and perhaps we should do this, but this would be a sort of new precedent in terms of the state paying for particularly high-cost drugs for hospitals like this. Is that fair to say?
Ms. Greenkey.
I don't know the answer to that question, so I might phone a friend from the department.
Mr. Birdie. Representative Knobloch.
Yeah, Mr. Burdick, I guess if we were to adopt the alternative that's the 0036 alternative and allocate $1.5 million as this six-month bridge, are there other state programs that for drugs have a sort of special reimbursement program for, let's say, particularly high-cost drugs or particular types of drugs over and beyond the general reimbursement for things like medical assistance?
Mr. Burdick.
Madam Chair, Representative Knobloch, I'll have to get back to you about the specifics around high-cost drugs. I don't have that information. The mechanism that is utilized here is used to compensate hospitals that serve a high volume of Medicaid patients, where the reimbursement sometimes creates challenges for those hospitals, and so that's the mechanism that this is purporting to utilize. I'll get back to you about the high-cost drugs. I'm not familiar between ourselves and other state agencies. There might be something I'm not aware of.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Burdick, maybe I'm asking the question in a wrong way then. I mean, when you talk about the hospitals that serve a lot of medical assistance patients right now that are being assisted underneath this 340B program, I mean, does the state itself supplement in any way beyond its regular federal match monies to pay for those additional high costs those hospitals have?
Mr. Burdick.
Madam Chair, Representative Knobloch, there are a number of very complex funding mechanisms that are utilized to fund these hospitals, including intergovernmental transfers, this disproportionate share funding mechanism. So the short answer to your question is there are a number of funding streams used to support these hospitals. What's unique about this is that this federal rule is really requiring the state to fundamentally change how we pay for our pharmaceutical benefit. And the mechanisms that we have within compliance with that rule are quite limited. This option that's here before you would be an option that could leverage additional state dollars to try and bridge that gap in a way that I think would be workable, at least in the short term.
And finally, Madam Chair, Mr. Burdick, if we were to do this $1.5 million bridge, is there any sort of federal match with that? I mean, there are, you know, many ways there are, you know, other federal matches with medical assistance and so forth. Do we get a match of some sort with the $1.5 million, or is it just a state $1.5 million?
Mr. Burdick.
Madam Chair, Representative Knobloch, my understanding from talking with the Hospital Association is that really what is needed to help bridge that gap is around $3 million. This $1.5 million represents what we would need to leverage that additional federal match that you referenced. We're in the process of doing a calculation on what that would look like, but typically our federal matching funds on medical assistance is around 50%. So we would definitely assume leveraging additional federal dollars with this approach.
Thank you.
Thank you for Ms. Krinke and Mr. Burdick. Mr. Humphrey.
Madam Chair, members, Buck Humphrey, I represent the Minnesota Pharmacists Association, the College of Pharmacy, and the Minnesota Health System Pharmacists. The state's implementation of this rule is very consequential to Minnesota pharmacy. It literally defines what the reimbursement rate for MA is for pharmacists in Minnesota, and that has a really big impact on not only the public side reimbursement, but also the private side. It really sets the floor. We worked, as you heard, with many stakeholders over a year and a half, about a year and a half with the department to put together what they came up with last year, which was a consensus proposal to implement the rule. It called for a higher rate than is in this amendment for pharmacy reimbursement. It also, as you heard from Mr. Burdick, addressed the 2% provider tax issue for pharmacy that is in this rule. And so we would really urge that you take a look at the 2017 recommendations that were adopted by both the House and Senate, were in the governor's budget proposal but did not end up making the cut last year, which is why I think the department was waiting for a new budget cycle to address this. But because they're out of compliance, which we just learned about in the last 36 hours, and then they came forward with a budget-neutral proposal to address this emergency situation. Based on the 1048 reimbursement rate and not addressing, being silent on the 2% provider tax issue, pharmacists will be dispensing at a loss. A majority of their MA fee-for-service will be dispensed at a loss. So this is not an acceptable approach to Minnesota pharmacy, and we urge you and the legislature to adopt the 2017 recommendations. This is something that resets the entire reimbursement scheme, as you've heard, and this is the first time since the mid-80s, so this is not a light issue. This will be defining for Minnesota pharmacy and all Minnesota pharmacists across the state moving forward.
Thank you, Mr. Humphrey. Have you had a chance to look at the amendments, Mr. Humphrey?
I have.
Yes.
Briefly.
And your opinion?
You know, we are not the experts on the 340B drug program, and so I would not make any comments on that. I think I'd leave it to the testimony that was given earlier. But the First Amendment, we would urge you not to adopt.
Which one was that, Mr. Humphrey?
The amendment that establishes the 1048 rate and is silent on the 2% provider, on our case, wholesaler tax.
Madam Chair, the budget neutral fix is what he's opposed to. He would like us to go back to 2017 language. It would be at a much higher cost to the state if we adopted the negotiated language from last year.
Well, this just got a whole lot more complicated, didn't it? Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Knobloch.
So, Mr. Humphreys, if you're opposed to the A229 amendment, but if we adopt the 036 amendment, that doesn't really solve your particular problem either. You're still going to be dispensing at a loss. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Mr. Humphrey. Representative Knobloch.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Humphrey. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on 340B? I do know on the 0036 amendment, on page 2, line 31, the dates do need to be changed. July 1st, 2018 needs to be changed to January 1st, 2019, even though we're not going to adopt that tonight. And then December 31st, 2018 is July 1st, 2019. So if we can make that oral amendment tomorrow. Representative Knobloch. June 30th? Oh, excuse me. June 30th. I heard July. Okay. So, yeah.
Madam Chair, yeah, I have
Representative Knobloch.
Madam Chair, do we have language and a fiscal note from the reform that Mr. Humphreys was mentioning from last year and what that would cost?
Madam Chair.
Senator Benson.
I believe we could find it, and I don't want to do this off the top of my head, and I'm kind of glancing at Mr. Albrecht. Maybe he remembers a ballpark number. But I'm glad everybody's still laughing at this time of night. I wouldn't want to speculate, but perhaps we can find out for the benefit of the committee. It would have a significant impact to our target.
So, Madam Chair, it's my understanding this was if there was a fiscal note, it was from last year. So we probably would need to have that repriced for this year based on current assumptions.
Madam Chair, this certainly is, as you say, it's just gotten more complicated. I think that on our side, we will let our staff look at this between now and tomorrow. I think it's going to be difficult, though, to try to go and vet whatever reforms were suggested in 2017 and update a fiscal note and try to incorporate all that into something here, given the limited time that we have.
Well, Representative Knobloch, I agree with you, but I do think we need to get this bill rolling, the HHS. So we are planning to leave the committee open, the conference committee open, to make some adjustments. So that will buy us some more time, and perhaps we can get some agreement on this, because I do think this needs to be addressed this year. So it doesn't have to be done exactly tomorrow morning, but it does affect Senator Benson's bottom line.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I wasn't saying that we shouldn't do something with the amendments that are before us tonight. I guess I'm saying that it sounds like if we look to the 2017 reforms that were referenced by Mr. Humphreys, that is an additional element of complexity, and I'm not very familiar with this area, but I'm not sure we'll be able to make a considered decision on that in the amount of time that we have available, while we perhaps can on these amendments. Mm-hmm. But we can talk about that more over the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Further comments? Anybody else would like to testify? Senator Benson?
Madam Chair, no, I'm glad that we're bringing this to light. I'm sorry it is happening at the last minute. We'll try to get this right in a short amount of time, with all due respect to Chair Knobloch. I'm afraid the complexity, the difference in the language might not be the next best use of our committee's time when we have to get the other HHS articles locked up, and we need to get the two of you sitting down and getting this budget negotiated. And so I think we do these tomorrow morning after Commissioner Johnson has had an opportunity to talk with the governor.
We'll get a fiscal note.
And we'll get a real fiscal note.
Right. With that, Representative Knobloch, would you like to make a few comments about tomorrow?
Sure. Well, Madam Chair, I don't know that I have anything to say other than what I said before. I believe that we'll have the remaining HHS articles sometime, I believe, tomorrow morning. But we have to see, of course, exactly when we do get them back. As soon as we get them back, we will post them, and I would expect that I will call a meeting to adopt them shortly thereafter, and that we will probably then do whatever we're going to do on this issue at the same time. So I guess I'd encourage people to think about this issue that has suddenly come before us. I really wish that, given we apparently, the state's apparently known about this for a month, that we could have had a little bit more notice than this. Apparently, other hospitals and such didn't get any notice either. But we are where we are, and we need to then act on it. So, yeah, my intention, Madam Chair, would be to take up the HHS articles as soon as we can tomorrow. I would anticipate that then we would recess, and we would probably be in recess a good part of the rest of the day while we talk to the governor's office about any other changes they might think need to be made, and we would then come in and potentially make those changes tomorrow evening.
That sounds wonderful. And thank you very much, everyone, for your patience and diligence. Thank you, Senator Benson, for your work on this. With that, meeting is adjourned.